Hello, hello. Good afternoon, everyone. How are we doing in Orlando today? Woo, there we go. Excitement. You guys aren't hungover yet. All right. I lucked out. Normally I get the Friday morning crowd where it's like, party, roller coasters. Welcome. This is Going Beyond F11, Debug Better and Faster with Visual Studio 2012. My name is Brian Randall. I'm a senior consultant with MCW Technologies. I'm also an ALM MVP and some people say a general troublemaker. In other case, my email address is on there. The slides are up on ComNet if you want to download them and show them back to your colleagues or do whatever with them. In other case, let's get right to it. The reason you're here, I hope, is because you like having a social life. It's that simple, right? Fundamentally, debugging is not necessarily fun. Yes, I know there's a few that are demented and sad, but social. But in general, we're debugging because something is not working the way we intend it to. Visual Studio provides a world-class debugging experience. Unfortunately, not everybody's as lucky as you to come to TechEd and learn. So they get thrown into their job, they get handed this tool, and they say, go forth and write code. Go forth and write bug-free code. And go forth and fix thy bugs when they show up. And what happens is, a lot of us know the very basics. We know how to step through code. We know how to set breakpoints. Yet there's this amazing amount of information available in the debugger that I want to show you about. But once again, there are some really cool, hardcore debugging tools. Anybody play with Son of Strike? Right? Yeah, a few people. People do native code, right? That's a pain and suffering lifestyle, right? My job here is so that you go and say, if I give Microsoft the right amount of money for the right Visual Studio, I get to go home early. I get to have more fun. That's what it's all about. Because you're going to write code that has bugs. Now, there's other sessions that will teach you to write unit testing and how that can help you write better code. But I know the facts. The facts are you're going to be writing code late at night trying to get something done, and there's going to be a problem. And you're going to have to figure out what that is. So we're going to talk about your tooling choices from Microsoft, what's available. We'll talk about some core debugging principles in the tools, stuff you may not even know there, right? Tools options. You'd be amazed how many people haven't visited that in a while. And then we're going to spend most of the session on IntelliTrace and see how it helps you, the developer, through the F5 experience. We're going to see how, if you can convince your testers to use the right testing tools and maybe something like Team Build, that they can give you more actionable bugs that you can quickly get information you need to solve the problem. And a great new feature in 2012, IntelliTrace Everywhere, the ability to gather IntelliTrace logs from production. And you'll be able to do this today. It's a go-live license, so if you want to try it with the RC, give it a go and see what you think. I think you'll find that it is an incredibly compelling piece of technology. Now, the session is about 2012, but I'm going to tell you a lot of stuff that applies to 2010. In fact, I will show 2010 at one point. Are you current, though? I'm never surprised anymore when I go into a customer and we start talking about how they do things. I say, so you got Service Pack 1? No. Why not? Well, I don't know. So it's, I don't know, I don't deal with that, my IT department's lazy, whatever. There's someone to blame except themselves for taking the initiative to say, I really need this. Service Pack 1 for Visual Studio 2010 brings a ton of great bug fixes, performance fixes. I mean, we always want to run faster, right? I've never heard anybody tell me, make Visual Studio run slower, please, right? In fact, we all know ways to make it do that on our own. Start it up, man. I love it, really, I do. Performance enhances, et cetera. As you'll hear, there's some changes they made in IntelliTrace with Service Pack 1. So you need to have Service Pack 1. In addition, there's lots of other goodness out there, and this is changing even more in 2012, in that Microsoft is no longer going to stay on this long ship cycle of they release something, drop it in your lap, and then they come back 2 years later. More and more teams on the developer side of the house at Microsoft have moved to, dare I say the word, agile delivery format, which means you will see updates on a regular basis. The Visual Studio team started with 2010 with the Ultimate SKU and that they released feature packs that added new features to the product if you own that particular version in between Visual Studio 2010 RTMing, releasing to manufacturing, and 2012 RTMing. So they're going to continue to deliver value. In 2012, one of the things you'll notice is that NuGet, if you don't know what it is, Google it after the session, Bing it, search at Yahoo. I don't know what people... Anybody search on Yahoo anymore? Take a look at NuGet. And what it basically is a way is to bring packages down from the internet. You can also have your own local server too, by the way, if your company doesn't like the internet. And you can bring down packages from the net. And Microsoft is letting everybody in the world do this. But more importantly, they're using it as a delivery mechanism to give you the latest libraries for doing ASP.NET, for example. And we're going to see more of that. And they're going to do more of that with the rest of the product. And so things like the Azure SDK for doing Azure, right? I think I heard the season was what Satya used this morning in the keynote, right? It was the spring season they dropped a new release of the SDK and tools. And there'll be another one before the end of the year, I'm sure. I'm sure they're not going to wait another year, right? Silverlight tooling was another feature that was added post-SP1. Windows Phone 7 tools are also shipped out of bounds separately. These are all things that bring more value to the product you already paid for and are using that you're not taking advantage of. And each one of those tools has additional debugging features for their particular areas. For example, if you provide the right Azure SDK tools and have Visual Studio Ultimate, you get IntelliTrace for your web and worker roles up in the cloud. If you do Azure and you're not using the Ultimate Edition with IntelliTrace, you're in the land of pain and suffering. You're back to crash dump debugging with debug.println, okay? You're crazy to be doing Azure without IntelliTrace. So know that you're on the right version and know you're on the latest service pack. Pay attention to it. Another great thing that's in 2012 is it now has its own built-in updating mechanism to let you know that not only are there updates to NuGet packages, but updates to the core products. If you play with the beta at all, you notice you should have got a notification saying, hey, we've updated some stuff, take a look. 2012, okay, the release candidate came out, we'll be looking at about 8-9 days ago. This also includes the Team Foundation server release candidate, so you can play with both of those. And just as before, there's multiple editions. They're going to have the express SKUs, they're going to have the professional, the premium, and the ultimate editions, so you have to pick which one makes sense to you from a budget standpoint as well as a feature standpoint. In addition, last Thursday, they released the Azure tools. And so you have everything you need today with the RC to really evaluate and say, are we going to be ready to upgrade when Microsoft releases this? And as I said, if you're a more adaptable organization, you can even go live with it today. Now, picking which one you're using is important because features I will show you can be version dependent. Now, the marketing team does a good job of trying to sell you. So if you go to the marketing sites and look at the site, they'll tell you at high level a feature, like IntelliTrace is only available in the Ultimate Edition. They'll tell you where things are available. But sometimes you're wondering, well, breakpoints, those are in every edition, right? They are. Bottom to the top, you can do breakpoints. But it turns out there's some more detailed features of breakpoints, which I'm going to show you, that if you go to the website, you can see that they might not be available in the Express SKU. Where's the answer? It's in your MSDN documentation. So go to MSDN, find the feature. Now, this hasn't been updated yet for 2012, partly because the marketing guys just released their plan for what they're going to sell. But when 2020 releases, they'll have a chart similar here. And you'll be able to go here and say, I really want that feature. Well, Brian showed that feature, what edition is it in? Well, you notice that for breakpoint conditions, it's in Pro, Premium, and Ultimate, but it's not in the Express SKUs. Remember, the Express SKUs are the free ones that you can download as a hobbyist or if you just want to play around. Okay? Now, the other thing to be aware of with the Express Editions is that with Windows 8, Microsoft originally said there's only going to be an Express Edition for Windows 8 that lets you build Metro-style applications and web applications. They have now said that sometime in the future, I don't think there's a definitive date. No one from Microsoft is going to change me on that? Yeah, I know. Sometime in the fall, hopefully, we will see a desktop edition that lets you build WinForms, WPF, etc. So they're trying to listen to you guys and do what you want. Now, as I said, tools options. Have you looked at it lately? There's lots of options in there, and some are good and some are annoying. Right? It just depends on what you're trying to do, what type of application you're building. But Visual Studio is out to make your life easier based upon the profile setting. So when you first start it up, it's going to ask you, what kind of developer are you? Are you a C-sharp developer, VB, web, etc.? I always do the general development because it's just the standardized settings. But once you pick a particular setting, they might adjust things. So you need to go into Tools Options and make sure it's doing what you want it to do. This can be particularly frustrating if you've used a previous edition, and you go to a new edition, and maybe you're going to get a new Windows 8 box and a new copy of Visual Studio 2012, and someone's moved your cheese. Where do things go? So let's just take a look at a couple settings I think are significant when you're doing debugging. So as I said, I'm on Visual Studio 2012 Ultimate Edition. This is the release candidate. And I have to say, I was one of the people who did not like the dark grayness, so little bits of color are nice. And one of the great things that's in 2012 is this new quick launch. Right? Sometimes finding an option or a feature is hard. And one of the great things is I can just come over here and say Tools, Options. And notice right away it says, hey, here's your most recently used one, but here's the menu item I think you might want to know about. So what if I go over here and say debugging options? And notice right there, if I stop typing so fast, let it finish, there we go. I can go straight to that option in the dialog so I don't have to look around and hunt and peck for it. Now, there's a lot of great things here. Some are things like confirmations. Do you want to be annoyed with that dialog box saying, are you sure? Really? Are you smart enough to know? Yes? Okay. And then there's more detailed ones that are important. One of the big ones that people have to watch out for is enable just my code. Now, enable just my code is particularly important to manage developers, right? We're lucky to live in this abstraction that is the .NET framework that takes away some of the nastiness that was the original programming model in Windows, right? The C native model, and says we're going to do some of the stuff for you. And we're going to provide this extra set of libraries and functions to do things for you. When you're debugging, though, one of the things that you want to find is, well, I'm calling from function A to B to C, and in between there's this other calls to, say, system.xml. Sometimes you care about that because you think your code's working fine, but you're not sure if the runtime's doing the right thing. Just my code says only show me my code that I'm running. However, if you're debugging something like, oh, SharePoint, sometimes you really need to get in there and see exactly what's executing and see what DLLs are being loaded from the GAC or from a particular sub-site. And so this can actually be a hindrance. So it's one of the things you have to know is on and that you should turn off when you need it. So let's take a comparison to see what happens here. Now, I've got a tour de force application here to show you that I'm sure you guys all can appreciate. And this is a calculator. And as you can tell, I'm a graphics designer at heart. And there we go, right? Got a breakpoint. Now, if we come over here to the call stack, you'll notice in the call stack, we see four items on the stack: external code, then my main entry point, external code, and then my code that I'm on the breakpoint. That's just my code, right? I'm only really seeing things on the stack that I care about. The things that are in brackets that say external code, that's magic. And a lot of times, that's what we care about. It's all magic. We don't care. But if I did care about it, what I might want to do is come back in there, stop my application. We'll just do it here. Debugging. Turn off just my code. And now, look at all that beautiful stuff there. Or maybe not, right? Now I see that there's all these different calls in the system.windowsforms libraries that are executing in between my actual code getting to the top of the stack where I can debug. And once again, where this gets important is when you're working in larger scale environments where there's a number of framework libraries that might be yours and might not be yours that are getting loaded, and you need to know what's actually being executed. This is particularly important when it's half of yours is source code and half of it is binary code that you don't have any source for to look at. So that's just a little one to make your life better. Now, the other one that is, once again, something that's really simple, but a lot of people don't even know it's there, is if you go over here to your debug menu item and select exceptions. What happens when a good thing happens to, or a bad thing happens to a good programmer? All right, let's go over here. Visual Studio knows about all sorts of types of exceptions, right? The exceptions it cares about depends upon what type of application you're debugging. I'm debugging a Windows Form application, therefore I care about CLR exceptions, common language runtime exceptions. And what happens is, by default, Visual Studio is going to let your application handle exceptions. And when it handles them, you never see it, right? On the other hand, sometimes you know something bad's happening. You're not getting the data back. The application appears to be working great. The problem is you're not getting the right data back. And this is something that we used to live with a lot in the 90s with Visual Basic programmers and On Air Resume Next. The application never blew up, but it just wasn't working right. Okay? So what you can do with this dialog box, and you can go nuclear by just checking this option right here, or you can get more selective and pick particular types or classes of exceptions. And what I'm basically saying here is, look, if something bad happens, like maybe we do something silly like a divide by zero error, notice it blew up and stopped right there. Now, why is this important? Well, how did I get there? Well, if we look at the call stack, I click this button. And notice this button is inside a try-catch block. So the difference is pretty straightforward. We'll stop debugging. I'll put it back to normal mode, right, which says let my application process exceptions. We'll do divide by zero. And notice zero just showed up on the screen. Okay? When you turn that bit off and say, look, I don't care, I want to see the exceptions, it lets you jump right to where it blew up. Now, this is particularly useful, for example, if you're a SharePoint developer. Anybody do SharePoint 2010? Anybody get a web page show up that has a correlation ID on it? Yep. And so you have to take that magical GUID and then you go get the tool and scan. Yeah, no. If you can attach the debugger, sometimes the easiest way to do is just turn off all exceptions. And the problem is, as you can see, you'd have to F11 quite a bit. But the nice thing is you will get to the source of the infection that you can't get to when you have proper error handling on. So those are things that are just right there that a lot of people don't think about. All right. Now, general debugging features that are really useful is taking advantage of breakpoints. First of all, breakpoints can have labels. You can then group and filter them. You can turn them on and off in groups. You can import and export breakpoints from within Visual Studio. You also can have what are known as conditional breakpoints. This is one of my favorites. Right? Anybody ever step through a loop and so you F5, 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 you got the breakpoint there. Because you know it's somewhere in there, but you know it takes at least 10 or 20. Right? Well, did you know you can set the breakpoint to only stop once it's been hit 19 times? Or better yet, you know that the problem occurs only when a particular type of value is loaded into a variable. You can do a condition on that. And when you use C# or VB.net, you'll even get IntelliSense inside the conditional breakpoint box. You can also do breakpoint hit counts. And then we have data tips. Data tips are those nice little things that you get when you hover over a variable. What a lot of people don't know is that not only can you hover over them, you can pin them so they stay in place on the debug surface as you step through your code. And you can import and export the data tips just like you can breakpoints. Now, there's additional features that I'm only going to show one thing in here because the first two in particular are their entire sessions on their own. If you do multi-threading code and you haven't moved up to 2010 or 2012, you're missing out a lot. The new debugging windows for multi-threading are really awesome if you do that. Now, granted, you have to understand multi-threading concepts and the parallel task library and all that good stuff. But if you're doing that and you're not using Visual Studio 2010, you're in pain. The profiler is another great way to debug your applications. This is where we focus on performance problems. Now, another new thing that we have in 2012 is the ability to build Metro-style applications on Windows 8, which is what I'm doing here. One of the problems with Windows-style applications, or sorry, Metro-style applications, is that to do a lot of the operations, you really want to have a touchscreen and a tablet. Well, I have a regular laptop here. And so with the Metro-style app simulator, I can make my application think that it's running in a Metro-style format. And I get the ability to actually make it think that I even have a finger and I can touch on the screen. I can also play with different resolutions, which actually is going to be really important here when you see that I can't run Metro-style apps right now on my native machine because I'm running at a resolution that's not supported. There's also the Windows debugging tools. If you're in a native code, you obviously should know about those. And there's also something called a debugger canvas that'll be updated that provides another type of visualization on the design surface. So let's go look at some of the general debugging features. So as I said before, breakpoints are a lot richer than people give them credit for. So one of the first things you can do is set a breakpoint. Okay, we actually, they are still red. Yay, they're not gray. Yeah, I don't want to get off on a rant here, but just let me say this. It's my Visual Studio too. They should have asked me before they took away all the color. Okay? That's all I have to say. All right. Now, the cool thing is that if you come over here, there's a breakpoints window down at the bottom. And this shows me the breakpoints that I have set in this particular solution. Okay? And then I can come over here, and I can edit labels. And so I can say this is a general breakpoint. And then we come over here, and we have other options for deleting all breakpoints that match the current search criteria. Well, what's that search criteria? Well, let's undock this window. Come on, there you go. No, I didn't want to do that. Come over here. There we go. Stop right there. Bring this out. And what was hidden because it was too small, the resolution, is I can search. So now I can say general. And notice it filtered down to show me only the breakpoint for general. So because breakpoints will persist in your particular user option files, these will persist between sessions in Visual Studio. So you can come back in, they'll still be there. You can turn them on and off, you can filter, I can uncheck. So it's still there, but it's just not going to be enabled or hit. Come over here, I can get rid of that, and we'll come back down. Oops, come back. Oh, that's not happy. Anyway, sorry. Now, the other thing is if you right-click on your breakpoint, this is where some of the magic is that a lot of people don't know about. First of all, condition. I want to stop when the condition that I type into this text box is true. Well, I'm using C sharp, so that means I can say, I want to stop here when y is equal to 0. So I can say if y. Okay? But it turns out I don't even have to do y. You can also do im dot, and notice I get IntelliSense. Right? So I can check return values, check variables, but I'm just doing something simple, so I say y equals 0. And say that is true. And now run the application, which is already running. So if I click it, I should stop. F5 comes back up. Now let's change it to 2 or 1. How about 2? Click it again. And notice I didn't jump into the debugger. Right? Conditional breakpoint. So now let's go in there and let's put a 0. Go back into there. And now if I hover, notice I get this data tip. And it shows me that y is 0. And if I hover over x, it's 1312. So I can come over here, and if I click right there, I can pin it. And then you notice it shows up right there. And then I can come over here and add a label. This is the value of x. Now I'm using very simple pieces of data, but you can understand when you're working with a real application, complex data, customer information, et cetera, you can now put data tips in there about why is this variable important. I mean, how many of you have inherited code that's not yours? So you spend the first couple steps through with F5 and F11 going, what is this code doing? Okay, I think I know what this variable does. Well, now you can pin these up here, and in fact, you can even move them around. So you come over here, put that over there. We'll do Y, pin that. We'll grab it there. And then now you'll notice over here in the gutter, I have these little push pins that show me that I have data tips. Now, the great thing about them is, as I said, they survive the session. And so now I can come over here, and we'll click that, click divide again. I don't hit my breakpoint because I turned it off, so let's go to another one. It's just F9 there. Click the button. Now I'm there. There's the values, and notice over here, it's nice and red, it pops up, but I don't even have to go and hover now. It's right there available to me. Just meant to make my life a little easier. Right? More productivity, solve problems quicker, go home sooner, see children, see your buddies, do what makes you happy. Sleep. I like sleep. Get older, sleep is good. All right. Now, I mentioned Metro-style applications. So we built a sample for Microsoft that'll be out later this year. And it's just a Metro-style application. The problem is, if I go to Metro and I try and run, how about the news application? This app cannot open. The screen resolution is too low for the app to run. Change your screen resolution. The problem is, if I change my resolution, you guys won't be able to see what I'm doing. Okay? So we really don't have a win there. Well, luckily, for you, you don't have a tablet, and when you don't have the resolution you need, you can go to the simulator, which is available at this drop-down here. So you just pick the simulator. And now when I run the application, watch what's going to happen. I'm going to get this window that's going to open. It looks like a frame of a tablet. And there's a Metro-style app for Fabricam Fiber running inside here. And notice the other cool thing about the debugger for Metro-style applications with the Document Explorer. This works both with WinJS apps and traditional HTML applications. So that I can come over in here and use the application. So we'll come in here and look at Daniel. And you'll notice if I right-click, I get the app bar. Now, I'm not going to move my mouse because we'll lose the focus, but watch this again. Watch behind right here where my mouse is. I'm going to zoom in for a second so you guys are clear where I'm going. Let's see if it'll, there you go. So watch right around here. And we'll come back over and right-click. Notice how the Document Explorer is popping up and it's monitoring live debug events. Even though I'm in a separate window, which is basically working through RDP, it's able to pick up that I'm talking to this Metro-style application. And I can get to the map data and the screen will update and it'll update the doc types as I click over it. And the other thing about the simulator, as I said, is I can use the hand button. And so now I can use my finger. I can swipe up, right? All that within here, and I'm able to control the resolution. Let's put this back to the pointer. right? It thinks I'm running a 10.6-inch tablet at 1366 by 768, right? So another enhancement in 2012 to make your life easier. You don't have to have another piece of hardware. Now, I understand. I won't tell if you don't tell. If you want to tell your boss you have to have a tablet because you can't debug, I understand. But because you will notice it does, the map data, by the way, is accurate in our application. But you'll notice that it thinks I'm in Los Angeles, which is where one of my developers is at. And the reason is I'm not getting geolocation data from the app right here. So if you want to test real hardware, there's a good reason to have a real device. But the simulator does do a pretty darn good job. All right, so let's go back here. There we go. All right. So as I said, a lot of the stuff we're going to cover now is about IntelliTrace. And notice there is a registered trademark symbol there. So this is important because Microsoft does this when they think they've got something really special. IntelliTrace was the only feature in Visual Studio 2010 to get a new registered trademark symbol. It is that revolutionary in that it basically is something that lets you go back in time. It's a historical debugger. Traditional debugger, when you set a breakpoint, lets you go forward. Yes, we have things like edit and continue that will allow us to kind of bring things back, but that's not going back in time. That's starting over. That's resetting the call stack from whichever position you drag back. With IntelliTrace, you basically get this time machine, this TARDIS, that lets you go back and look at how things were. Now, IntelliTrace is targeted, number one, at you, the developer. It's meant to make your life in Visual Studio even much better than it already is with the debugger tools we have. But it turns out testers can use it too. And when testers use it, that makes your life better. And I'll show you that. And now, with the 2012 release and IntelliTrace Everywhere, this helps IT pros gather rich debug data. And we're not talking nasty crash dump analysis stuff that we did in the old days or still do. We're talking about a rich set of data that shows you what was on the stack and, if properly instrumented, gives you things like the line of code you're on so that you can go back in time on your dev box from a production machine and find out what went wrong. That is cool. Why? Well, it's really straightforward, because F11 starts to suck. Right? Step, step, step. Can I just find the problem? Because here's what happens. You get a report of a problem. And you get a nice bug report. They say, I clicked here, I did this. And you know in a real application, not my calculator, but a real application that has a UI, a mid-tier, a data tier, and you got code flying around, objects and stuff, that sometimes to get the exception to even occur, you have to spend 15, 20 minutes with it. And then when you do, if you don't have the breakpoint at the right place, you're stuck doing it over again. And that's why we start stepping, right? Because we're afraid to miss it. That gets old really quick. I have gray hair because of it. Now, as I said, disclosure. This is only include the Ultimate Edition. But it works in 2010 today, and with 2012, you get enhanced performance, more features, and as I said, the IntelliTrace Everywhere. So you can go home today and use this. You don't have to wait for the beta to be RTM'd, et cetera. But obviously, 2012 will bring a lot of goodness. Now, this is one of those things, once again, where service packs are your friend. In Service Pack 1 for Visual Studio 2010, they added x64-bit support, which gave you support, for example, for SharePoint. That's huge. You don't have the service pack. You're missing out on these features that you paid for, but you're not being able to take advantage of. That's no good. The key thing about the 2010 feature set is it's not licensed for production use. And to be honest, you'd find probably that some of the performance issues that it would cause your systems would be a little unbearable. Okay? Performance in 2012 is awesome. It is money. They have done a great job. So the basics are pretty straightforward, right? This debugger that's sitting there and monitoring what's going on basically injects itself into your process through the profiler APIs that are available to manage applications. And it's all about helping you stop the no more repro scenario, where a customer or a tester says, I got this problem, and you go, hey, it doesn't happen on my machine. Woohoo! Right? Now, what gets collected? Well, first of all, there's a knob you can turn. Right? And you can go all Spinal Tap and crank it up to 11, or you can start at the basics. The basics are that it will capture what are known as IntelliTrace events. These are where instrumented functions process data, like exceptions, and the IntelliTrace collector gathers them up and makes them available to you. But you can also turn the knob and say, you know what? I want to know more. I want to be able to go back in time at a rich method level. So you can turn that on, and they will track entry and exit points through every piece of code that gets executed in the application. In addition, you can enable breakpoints and trace points, and it will gather that data when you're doing a developer F5 experience. So let's see how we do this. Now, we've been working with my calculator, so we'll go back to that. Unfortunately, WinJS apps are not managed applications, so we can't do IntelliTrace there. You'll see later I have a chart with where it works, and Metro-style applications written in C# or VB.NET with XAML, you can use IntelliTrace with Visual Studio 2012. Now, I've got my breakpoints here, and let's just turn them off for now. Let's go to the breakpoints window, which I hid. So let's go over here, because I can't find it. And we'll just turn these off for now. And let's run my application. And we'll do something like this. Now we see zero. The data came back, and we know that the data is bogus. Right? We know something bad happened. So the solution, of course, is I go turn on my breakpoints, I start stepping through. Or I go into Visual Studio. Now, I've turned it off on purpose. It turns out if you go to debug and you have in the Ultimate Edition, you'll have this IntelliTrace menu option. And when you pick Open IntelliTrace Settings, you can turn on the magic. Now, as I said, by default, this is on in the Ultimate Edition for you, so it's already there. And it's funny, though, even though it's on by default, how many people just ignore it or don't even pay attention to it? Check this box, and this is the basic setting. This says, give me IntelliTrace events only. Okay? Minimal effect on performance. So let's run it again. Okay. Zero. Divide. Okay. Now, you'll notice down here at the bottom, I have this window tab called IntelliTrace. Let's click it. And let's click Break All. And there you go. We look at that little bit of history there, and we see that, well, we click this button, but look at this. Exception thrown and exception caught. Double click on it, takes me right to the line of code that the exception occurred on. It knew exactly where it was. And what we'll see is we go back to tools options. I can control which events IntelliTrace captures. Right? So we come over here, continue, get back into regular mode, and we'll shut down. If we go back over to debug IntelliTrace options, you'll see there are a ton of events. Does anybody know the number of events? 362? I don't know. I counted them at one point, but they keep changing. The point is you see there's different event categories. So for example, if we scroll down a little further, we can look at things like user prompts, and we can see things like Windows forms and WPF message boxes. All right. If we look at gestures, oh, we have gestures like web forms and, sure enough, Windows forms. Now, they've turned on the most popular things they think you want. But this is where you can start cranking the knob, right? We're down here at level 3, level 4 on the dial. You can start picking more of the things you want based upon your type of application. And what will happen is that list on the side for just events will grow or shrink based upon the things you've turned on or turned off. But let's go a little simpler. Let's say, you know what? Let's crank it to 11. Let's go all Spinal Tap on it. Run the application. And this is one of the, this is, like I said, this is the whole TARDIS effect. This is where it's money. We come in here, divide by zero, break all. Now, once again, I have a very small call stack. But here's the best thing. I come over here into my code, and there's this catch. And notice this thing over here in the gutter. Those look like sideways VCR buttons, right? It's kind of like TiVo for developers. I basically get to fast forward and rewind the call stack, right? The debugger's paused, right? I'm not really executing my code. But now I'm able to come in here and say, well, how did I get here? Well, let's just keep pushing up. Oh, I got there. Okay, I came in here. Okay, so we can come over here and scroll up, and we see that, okay, we're in the button click. Well, let's step in. Let's step into that divide. Oh, look at that. Let's hover over this. What got passed in on the stack? Oh, an X, a Y. Okay, what did I do next? Oh, we came down here. And then what happened? Jump out. Oh, I got popped down here, and I ended up in the stack. I'm able to play back and forth through the execution. I get to see what was happening. And if there was data pushed or popped onto the stack, I'm able to see the values in those variables. Now you've got to just say, well, I need a little more data. I'd like to know what the variables were. Okay, great. Well, there's a couple more things you can do there. Let's come back over to the application, continue out. And now let's go back to the code, and let's do a couple other methods. Let's come over here to the subtract method. And let's put a breakpoint there. And how about we'll come over here to our friend the add method, and we'll jump down into the library here. And let's actually, we're not even going to call this code. What we're going to do here is we'll come over here and condition. Breakpoint, I want to insert a trace point. Okay, we don't care what the trace point does, we just want it there. Run the application, and now let's come over here and let's do subtract. So there's the breakpoint. We ran it, great. Let's do our divide by zero. Okay, and let's add. Now, notice add, I didn't break into the program at all. So let's see what happened there. Well, if we go to break all, right, notice these items here that have debugger breaks. I can come over here and see when I hit breakpoints, and I can gather data at that particular point in time. But even better, if we go over here to add, right? There's no data there, but if I step in, I can see the values that were passed in. Even though I never stopped inside that add method, I'm able to see the data because I had the trace point. So you can set trace points all over the place and be gathering data about what's executing. Right? So this is all for you. This is just to make your F5 experience better in Visual Studio. I think that's really great and compelling, and you have this today in 2010, and as you see, it works in 2012, and it's a lot faster. It's really, really enhanced. So this is really good stuff. Now, IntelliTrace gets even better for teams when you use things like Team Foundation Server and Team Build. IntelliTrace gets enhanced when you're doing debug analysis from testers and from production when there's PDB files or source files that exist. PDB files are debug symbol files that are available. Debug symbol files, or PDBs, help the debugger match up in-memory data about what was executing the memory addresses to the source code that was used to produce the binary you're debugging. You really should keep your symbol files around. The problem is maintaining multiple builds, et cetera, becomes a hassle if you don't have the right tools. Microsoft for years has had a product called Symbol Server, and they use it to make available their symbols, but a lot of organizations never take the time to set it up because it's just one extra thing you have to do to get going. John Cunningham at Microsoft has a great blog post and diatribe on this, and I've got a link to a great article by John Robbins that I'll point you to. But basically, you need to consider PDB files almost as important as source files. Right? You need to love them, you need to hold them, you need to protect them. Because they're going to be what's going to help you find the problem when you're working on a newer version of the application and a person has a problem with the previous version. Because with those symbol files and the IntelliTrace file, we're going to get a rich experience to be able to find the problem. Now, setting up a symbol server is easy. You set up a share, set up permissions, and then you just point your builds to it. In addition, you can go one step further and have source server indexing. And what will happen is, as part of the build process, they will map information about the version that was built in your source file so you can automatically get that version of source pulled out of TFS and made available to you. And that's really awesome also. So let's show you how you configure Team Build to work with IntelliTrace and symbol server, really. And I keep going to the wrong desktop, so let's try this again. Alt-Tab, there we go, here we go. Okay, now, hello, that's weird, I get the Metro-style toolbar at the bottom. All right, let's see if I can get Visual Studio to pop up there, okay. Now, I've got a team project here, and I've already created a build definition called math system. Now, if we open up my build definition for math system, You'll see there's lots of different options here. Do you want to do manual, continuous integration, rolling builds, et cetera? I know Mickey Gousset is going to have a great talk on team build later in the week. I think it's on Wednesday, so you can go to that if you want to learn more about the magic behind this. But in either case, you see I have a solution here to build called Math System, just like we've been using before. The key is down here under source symbol settings, I've just expanded this, and I've said, yes, please index my source and publish my symbols. And I've told it to publish it to localhost slash TENA sim. If we take a look at my machine, wake up! Okay. The lights got enhanced, okay. You'll note in this folder, I have some PDB folders. And basically, it's just a magical file structure that has my PDBs. Because of that structure, the way the tools know, they know how to find the PDB to match it up with the debugger. Great magic happiness. Okay, great. Index source, great. Just kick off a build. And it does all the work for you. Okay? That's all it is. Open up a share. Make sure there's disk space available. Set permissions to what works in your organization. Some people are very free in their organization. Other people are very strict. So you might have to set some DACLs and security settings. But that's it. Every time you do a build, it will put the PDBs out there, and it will write metadata into the PDB that helps it match up with the TFS version of the particular source file that was changed. All right? Now, under Tools Options, once again, that little dialog box that has so much magic in it that people forget about, you control a few settings there that are important. The first one is enable source server support. Okay? That's going to help it when you go to do debugging to call over to source server, find the right source code, and pull down from TFS. Symbols let you specify where you want to get symbols from. So I can say localhost Tina Sim. Okay? And it set a cache folder for me. I'm good to go. Okay? Now my build should have run okay, and sure enough, there it did. Okay? So this is just step one. Set the infrastructure up so that you have symbols being created for every build. And you can control the builds, how often they get deleted. You control when symbols get deleted, et cetera. Mickey will show that in his talk. But the point is, you can keep the important builds around. Your beta builds, the ones you give out to customers, so that later, when that bug report comes in, Visual Studio can do the work for you, match the symbols up, and find the source to that problem. Okay? But we had to get this set up. Now, the breakdown is that you're going to typically run nightly builds. And testers are going to pick up those builds. Now, maybe you do more rich development where you have branches and you do integration between branches. Fine. The point is, testers should be testing against a well-known build. When they test against that build, you prefer them to use a debug build initially. Now, when you're doing performance tuning and everything else, you might move it to release build. Folks, you can still ship applications with release symbols. Right? Release builds can have symbols, too. They're not just for debug builds. Okay? And what happens is, the tester's going to go through and do their tests, typically a manual test. They're going to sit there and they're going to click buttons, they're going to try and do things. And when it blows up, they're going to create a bug. Now, how many of you have got the bug that says, the application blows up, the new build sucks? Great, thanks, that really helped. Thank you, I'll get a fix for you. No more repro, does not reproduce. Okay, so we want them to give us more. We want things like screenshots, we want things like, IntelliTrace logs, right? We want to be able to kill bugs faster. So how are we going to do that? Well, we have this idea of an actionable bug. Microsoft Test Manager lets testers create actionable bugs because it has features that are meant to gather as much data as possible so you as a developer get right to the root of the problem. The idea is that a tester is going to use Microsoft Test Manager to define a test case. They then use the manual test runner to execute it. When they run a test, they define what's called a test configuration. Test configurations have options like what type of environment I'm testing against. But more importantly, they let you specify what data they're going to collect. So if I'm testing an ASP.NET application, I could say, you know what? I want to capture ASP.NET IntelliTrace data. On the other hand, I'm doing user interface testing for a WinForms app. I might want to record a video so the developer can see exactly what I'm doing as a tester. And I might want to turn on IntelliTrace. I might want to provide system information. These are all done through what are called data diagnostic adapters, or DDAs. And you just turn them on, just like the whole Spinal Tap thing. Crank it to 11 when you need it, turn it off when you don't. The other cool thing about DDA is you can write your own. So if you have some specialized environment that Microsoft's not covering, you can gather additional system data and put that into the bug report automatically. This gives you better bug reports, means you spend less time trying to fix the problem. So how do we do it? Well, it's pretty straightforward. So I've got Visual Studio here. I'm just going to minimize that. And I'm going to put on my testing hat and fire up Microsoft Test Manager 2010. Now, I would be doing this with 2012 RC, but unfortunately, it's still an RC for a reason, because there's a bug. I can't do this exact scenario in 2012 for you. So if you try and go do this at home with 2012, you might run into trouble, and you'll be cursing me and Microsoft. It's a bug. It's already been fixed. I've been told and promised. So I'm getting nods from people that Microsoft here. So you can try this with the RTM version. In either case, I've got a test case here that I'm going to reset. Now, a test case, if you open it up, is simply a set. Whoops, I went to the wrong place. Let's go to the plan. Let's open the test case up. It just lists some steps. And I can say, you know, you click the number in. What's the expected results? Triad. It should not blow up, right? And I can basically say that this is a ready-to-go test. I'm really happy about that. And we'll close it up. So go over to the test. And we get rid of this extra dialog that popped up. And when you go to run a test on the test tab, thank you, you can run it, and that'll run with your default plan options, which is typically something the test manager does. It says, okay, this week we're going to use this build, and we're going to test first with these configurations. We're going to focus on the UI. Okay, testers have their own magic, and I applaud what they do. I don't pretend to understand it completely, but I do sometimes. In either case, I like to pick run with options, because I'm going to go off-road and say, you know what, I want to test this new build, the .3 build. And I'm going to use my default test settings. Well, what are those default test settings, Brian? Well, let me show you real quick. Let's go back to the plan, go to properties, and let's go over here to open the test settings, data and diagnostics, right? And you'll notice, there it is, IntelliTrace. I've turned it on, and if we go to configure, you'll see a similar looking settings. Oh, cool, right? And also the other thing you can do, you come over here and say, you know what, there's some things I want to exclude, even processes. Notice you can exclude things like, oh, maybe Outlook and IM and, you know, I don't know, what do people use for games these days at work, Facebook? In either case, you can control what gets recorded. So I've got my settings turned on for IntelliTrace. Now I'm going to go back to my test, and I'm going to run with those options. Let's go back and get that build. And we'll run it. And what's going to happen is this is going to start the manual test runner. Okay. It's unhappy because I went and modified the test settings, if you're curious. And the test settings I modified was the steps, and they had recorded steps already, blah, blah, blah. So we're not too upset about that. But I am upset that I'm getting the Windows 8 Explorer here. Not the local. Whoops, no, not Internet Explorer. This is really weird how this will not go away. Maybe if I hide it. I find it bizarre that I'm seeing the Windows 8 taskbar in my RDP window. Oh, I know what to do. Do that. No, that doesn't work either. Control alt break? I'm not going to do that because you're scaring me, sir. You're going to set me up for failure. I apologize if you were being generally helpful, but you know, my trust level with the demos I saw this morning has gone down. All right, so here's my compiled version from the build folder. I'm going to click Start Test. And what you're going to see here is it's going to tell me what to do. It says Start the app. Okay, I'll start the app. Did it start? It did. Great. I'll just tick that off. I'm happy. Enter a really big number. Okay, I did. Nothing bad happened. Great. Enter a second really big number. I'm even more happy. That did not break either. Now it says, try to add. Notice when I typed in that expected saying, it should not blow up. We'll see. Oh, application go boom. Okay. Now, I'm going to come over here and say, fail. It blew up. Right, this is the helpful things I generally get from my testers. Now, they can do nice things for me, and then I can come over here and capture a screenshot. So I can come over here and say, you don't believe me?
Look at that.
And then I come over here and I click the magic create a bug button. And this is now on the way, so I'll get rid of that and let that get out of my way. Make this a little bigger. Application blew up in front of our best customer. You suck. Okay, we'll sign it. And we're going to save and close it. Now, when this gets done, come back to my test. And you can resume. I can continue testing because maybe it wasn't fatal, but this one was. In the test, my test is now failed. Save and close. And now we take off our tester hat, and we go over to Visual Studio, which is right here. Now, in Visual Studio, because I'm using Team Foundation Server, has a great thing for bugs. Let me see, what are my bugs? There's my bug report. Now, let's take a look at some of the magic that's in here. First of all, I can watch a video of what really happened. Boom. Okay, that's hard to argue with, right? Yeah. Okay, let's see what else is in here. Oh, they got pictures too. Okay, not looking so good. All right. And we keep going, and then there's my dream, my money. All right, so we're going to click the link. Now, this is the old 2010 log file. The new one's a lot cooler, but in either case, notice this little green checkbox. We like that. That's a happy box. That's saying this build, we know about symbols. We're going to help you. And then we're going to see that, ooh, there was an exception. And we look at that and we say, well, I wonder where it was. Double click. Oh, sweet. Really? Fix the scroll box a little and double click on the throne. There's the exception. Right? I'm looking at the log file that was attached to the bug. But notice the title up in Visual Studio, up in the top there, IntelliTrace Debugging. The debugger's live, right? I'm able to see that this is where the program blew up. This is my tester making my life better. I know exactly where I can start spending my time. I don't have to set a bunch of breakpoints. Don't have to F5 and F11 around. I'm right at the problem. All I had to do was do a little effort up front, make sure that they're using a build that I have symbols for. And once again, even without symbols, it's still useful because you'll get the exception. Okay? Symbols just make it better. Throw in a little source server support, a little TFS, and you get an experience like that. That's awesome. We like that. And you can do that today, as you saw I did with 2010. So what's supported? This is for managed developers, right? A large percent of the community. Yeah, I'd love to see this for C++. I'd love to see it for JavaScript. Well, shipping is a feature. Microsoft, hopefully, that'll be on the next release. You know, whatever. The point is, it works today for managed developers. .NET 2, 3, 3, 5, 4, 0 are all supported by 2010. ASP.NET, WinForms, WPF, et cetera. You saw those events. You can turn them on and off, really crank it up. Right? x86, x64 support with Service Pack 1 of Visual Studio 2010. As I said also, if you're doing Azure and you're not using IntelliTrace, you're crazy. That's all I can say, right? If you're doing web roles with C#, service roles, worker roles, things that are deployed into those Azure environments with managed code and you're not using it, you're making your life painful, unless you just do demos, right? Here's the things that's not supported, right? Big things, C++, script, things like that, Xbox. Now, the other thing that you have to be aware of is the way IntelliTrace injects itself into the process, it has to get there in the beginning. And so things that are already running, it can't grab a hold of. Now, there's ways to work around this, particularly for F5 debugging, right? Particularly if you factor your applications differently. But if you have a service, for example, you can't just attach to it and do IntelliTrace debugging. That will not work, okay? Visual Studio 2012, all the things I just showed you work. They work faster. They work better. But now we have this extra thing called IntelliTrace Everywhere. Now, this is a benefit of your Ultimate Edition. I don't know the rules about deployment, all that stuff. The bottom line is you buy Ultimate, and you get the rights to deploy the collector. And when you deploy the collector in a production environment without Visual Studio, without all the helper tools, it will generate an IntelliTrace file that you get to do exactly what I just did with the test environment but we could do it for production. And I'm going to show you that on a machine that's a domain controller that has no Visual Studio on it. We're going to do just that in just a second. So how do you do it? Well, what happens is you basically have to turn on the collector. There's this little runtime exe, and you can launch it through PowerShell. You can launch it through a command script. I'm going to show those two options. You want to get real exotic, you can build a wrap around it and make it transparent to the user. The key is it has to be able to restart the process that they're running. So if it's a web app, it'll recycle the pool. Okay, and if it's a Windows application or WPF, you basically have to restart the app, and it will collect the data. And once again, you get to control the knob. Now, there's basically three levels of production. If you're doing WinForms or WPF, you basically have diagnostic or trace, events or events and call stack. If you're doing a web application, they give you this bonus medium level, which gets turned on automatically, which is to gather request data. So you can see the request coming into the server, so you can figure out which server it's coming from and all that good stuff. Now, each level has a cost, right? There are performance penalties for turning on IntelliTrace because it's sitting there collecting data. If you look at tools options in Visual Studio, you can control the log file size, and that's something you can also do from these collectors. So you need to have the log size at the appropriate level. You don't want to miss the events, right? But the larger the event log file, particularly when you get over a gigabyte, it's going to make debugging in Visual Studio a little painful. So you want to play with this a little, get used to it. So let's just do it. All right, so we've got another machine here. Let's see, we want to go to that one. Okay, and once again, I've lost my... Let's see if it's there underneath the covers. It's still there, so let's do this. And now, nope, it still doesn't want to show up. That's okay. All right, so let's start up Internet Explorer. Now, the nice thing about what I'm showing you right now, you can go home and play with this right away. This is a virtual machine built by Brian Keller, and it has all the stuff installed. So you just need Hyper-V, and you can play with this to your heart's content. Now, what I'm going to do here is I have the IntelliTrace files extracted on this machine. And you notice there's this exe called IntelliTrace SC.exe, and a bunch of supporting DLLs, and there's some doc files that I'm sure are related to legal rules and stuff, and you can probably get rid of those once you agree to them. But in either case, this is the little program that's going to get executed for me. Now, the way I'm going to do that is through PowerShell. Inside the scripts folder where they're already set up, and one is to start, and one is to stop. And if we take a look in here, there's just a bunch of configuration options here to call PowerShell, which then in turn, if we open this in Visual Notepad, passes a bunch of information to to PowerShell about IntelliTrace to get things going. Okay? All right, so life is good. So we're just going to come over here. I will start a command prompt. CD users, public, CD scripts, or desktop, CD scripts. There we go. All right. And I always like to just start from the command prompt so I can see in case something blows up. Okay? And it's ready to go. So we go back over here to Internet Explorer, and we're going to go to this portal. Now, this portal has a bug in it. You start clicking through logs for Fabricam Fiber that are customer requests, and occasionally it just blows up. They don't know why, because it's random. Now, what's happening is the application pool is spinning up, right? We're loading ASP.NET, so there is some cold stuff starting to get things going again. Oh, and look, we even had an error, it looked like. But let's just double-click. Let's try this one. No, okay. There it is. There was an error. Oh, those are my favorite. There's an error. Good. So we close down the application, stop. And now we go out to my hard drive, and you'll see that there's a log file location folder. There's a log file. Look at the date timestamp, 243 on 6/11. Good. And now, well, let's just double click on it. Now, I can do this because I have Visual Studio installed. We're going to do another demo in a second. Now, this is the new IntelliTrace summary. Notice it's a lot cleaner. They've chosen not to take up real estate with a bunch of pictures. And you'll notice because it's a web application, I can see the web request that came in. Okay, so I get information there. And once again, I get my exception data. Now, if we scroll down here and click on exception, you'll see I can see call stack data here. So those aren't very interesting to me because that's not my code. And we'll look at this null reference exception. No, that's got MVC code at the top of the stack. No. Ah, but look at that one. Fabricam fiber.extranet.webcontrollers. That sounds like my code. Double click. Right to the code where the problem is, and you'll notice that the exception thrown is right here. Notice I didn't open the solution, I just started Visual Studio right away. But because of all the data that's embedded there, I got it from a production scenario using that command line collector. Wasn't a tester, wasn't a developer using Visual Studio, it was just my application running, and someone in the IT department was able to turn on that collector and grab that file for me. All right? Well, let's do it again. Only this time, let's go back to my math application. Stop debugging. So we come over here and go to the folder. Let's see, what did I do with my program? Well, that's the source for it. This is one of those, did I reset my machine things that I wonder. Oh, let's see if I put it on my desktop. So first of all, before I remember where my code is, if you want to know where you get this IntelliTrace runtime pack, it's actually stored in a CAB file on your Visual Studio Ultimate box. So where you install Visual Studio Ultimate, you drill down into this gnarly directory, common 7 ID, blah, blah, blah. I can't remember. You can search for it on the internet, and they'll tell you. But there's the CAB file. And what you're going to do is you're going to copy that CAB file out. And when you copy that CAB file, you have to run a special switch here. You basically run expand /F:*. Yeah, that's really memorable. But in either case, that will extract that CAB file on the machine. And the great thing is this allows you to drop the CAB file to your IT pro and say, take this CAB file, extract it, and run this on the web servers, and we'll start collecting. Okay, and you can include your PowerShell script or your commands script there. Now, for my application, though, mine's a Windows Form app. And for some reason, I forgot where I put it. Where was it? Let's look at the date modified. Prod. Oh, little folder called prod. Go figure. Sorry. If you look under the iTrace folder, I've extracted that CAB file. There's all the data I just showed you, okay? There's IntelliTrace.sc.exe. That's what needs to be called. So I want to basically have it start my Windows Form application so it can collect the data. So how am I going to do that? Well, once again, you can get real fancy or you can go old school and I just wrote a command file. So once again, we'll look in Visual Notepad. Drop this in. Turn on word wrap, and let's just go a little zoom in on here. Whoops, word wrap did not turn. Oh, it did. I need to make it smaller. Okay, what we see happening there? I'm calling IntelliTrace.sc.exe with the launch switch, telling it I want to use the full collection plan. They give you a couple sample collection plans. You can write your own, but it's a little pain and suffering. Hopefully, they'll have a better tool for us. But basically, this tells you which events you want to monitor. Then you say, where do you want to write the log file to? And of course, you want to probably write the log file someplace that you have disk space. And then finally, this is the application I want to run. Okay? So that's my whole application. Now, I can run it here, but you might be wondering, will it really work in production? So let's just, I'm not even going to bother running it here. I'm just going to copy this folder, and I'm going to drop it into this machine over here, which is my host machine, which for some reason doesn't want to let me put it there. So we'll put it in the util folder. Okay, so I'm copying my files from this development server onto my real Windows 8 host machine. So just prove that to you real quick. Here's Windows 8. There's the util folder. There's the prod folder I just copied. Okay, now I've got a couple other RDP sessions here. Here I'm on my domain controller. Okay. Notice it says OS version that, but I'm sure you don't believe me, so we'll go over here. Right, Windows Server 2008 R2. And because there's other cynics in the audience who already gave me trouble about this, let's go to Control Panel, uninstall a program. All I have is .NET framework on here in Silverlight. Right, I have no Visual Studio, nothing. So we're going to come over here, and we're going to go get those files from util. and I'm going to copy them to the local C drive inside my domain controller virtual machine. Now I'm going to start a command prompt, change to prod, and I'm doing this so you can see that startup. I'm going to start my application. It's launching it through IntelliTrace. Okay. Oh, divide works, right? We fixed that, so we have a try catch there. Boom. Quit it. Go over to prod. There's my log.itrace file. Notice there's no nice pretty icon, right? Let's copy it. We'll put it back on the server. We'll put it in this util folder. Go back over. Now I'm going to switch back to the Visual Studio machine. Right here. Did I not put it in the util folder, or am I having the great RDP nightmare of not refreshing? Did I put it in the wrong folder? I'm on the wrong machine. Okay, let's go back to the domain controller. I put a util on the domain controller. That's a good place to put it. That's going to be really useful. Okay, let's try that again. Here we go. Okay, now it's on my host machine, my Win8 box. There it is. And now let's go over here to this one. Let's copy that file out. We'll copy it up here with my web one. We'll double click. Well, notice, first of all, there's the divide by zero error we had earlier. And here's the overflow exception. And there you go. Is that money or what? I got this from production. There's nothing out there. Come on, that's cool. Give me a little. Thank you. I'm dying up here. I mean, granted, I didn't build it. I don't get any money for this, but for you guys liking it. But come on, this is cool. All right. So I think I'm about done. I just got a couple things to tell you, and then we can take a couple questions. So everything you can do in 2010 is supported, but we get the new stuff, right? We get this production support, .NET 4.5 support, Windows 8 Metro-style applications that are XAML, or basically CLR-based, so XAML applications, events only. Due to the WinRT changes, they don't let you get the full event level, but we do have still events, which is useful. F-sharp is still experimental. Now, once again, you're not going to have to wait for Visual Studio 2014 or 15, whatever the next release is, for more goodness. Microsoft has already committed to Jason Zander, on behalf of his team, has committed via his blog that says, look, we're going to have a feature pack, just like we did before, and this next feature pack is going to have new IntelliTrace goodness. We're going to let you get refinements so that you can collect data just on particular classes or specific functions. This allows you to reduce the overhead of IntelliTrace, particularly in production. In addition, they're going to add a lot of new yummy features to make SharePoint debugging better and easier. So IntelliTrace is going to continue to deliver value even after the RTM with 2012. More information, once again, my slides are on ComNet, so if you want to get these links, you have to try and write them down. Jason Zander's blog post, IntelliTrace docs for 2010, IntelliTrace docs for 2012, as well as John Robbins' The Bug Slayers article on why PDBs are important. If you want a little more technical details, you can look at that. And I'm done. So thank you very much for coming.